A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
It's the Drink Talking with the Thinking Drinkers, Ben McFarland and Tom Sandon, and Mistress of Wine, Sam Capon. All the booze news and views, from Absinthe to Zinfandel. First for news, news for thirst.
Hello, listeners, and welcome again to our podcast. It's The Drink Talking, where today we are recording in a new environment. We're in an office space. It's a charming corner office space with beautiful big windows.
Workman opposite.
Yeah, there's quite a lot going on. There's a lot of visuals. But the only reason to tell you that is because there might be some extra noises here. The mice might be getting into this part of the office.
It sounds like a kind of, you know, that noise, that urinal.
Yeah,
noise,
yeah, no, exactly.
Kind of... Yeah, so a bit like on a science fiction film, and there's that weird space hum.
Yes.
But it's not quite as exciting as that. but yes, just bear with those extra noises as we go through our fantastic podcast. We're going to be tasting drink, talking about drink, pouring drink into your ears.
Yes, nice one, Tom. Yeah, your signature intro. I like it.
I've never heard that before.
my name is Tom Sandham. I'm the spirits expert, and today I am hosting. That's a very glamorous term for what anyone does on this podcast. And I'm with Sam Capon, Mistress of Wine. Hello, Sam. How are you?
Good morning. Very well.
Good. And Ben McFarland, our beer expert.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm okay. Yeah, all right. Although my hernia has been playing up.
You do not have a hernia.
I do. I've had a couple of hernias.
Have you?
Yeah. I had a big operation a couple of years ago on them.
Why has it gone back? Did you have mesh or surgery?
Well, interestingly, the consultant said that he did the repair work and they put a big mesh over part of my internal
That's why it's not working,
organs.
No rubbish. You need to speak to my father.
Well, then it popped out again. It came up above the mesh.
That's because mesh is shit.
Yeah. The consultant said...
You need surgery.
Is it like a bubble in a carpet?
It was surgery. It was keyhole surgery. But then he said he wanted to have another look just because he was curious as to why there was another hole there.
My dad is a general surgeon and has done a lot of hernias. He's sadly now retired, but he says mesh is shit.
Oh, it's good to know now, because they stapled that in and it was quite a large piece of mesh.
Can we not bring your dad out of retirement? One last hurrah.
Give it a go.
Ben, come round. You're all right? Are you?
Well, no, I fell down the stairs today.
I'd give you an opportunity to talk about
that. I had a terrible start to the day. I picked up my little 1.5-year-old out of his cot, carried him down the stairs. He talks to me. He's very lively in the morning. And I missed a step. Or... Yeah,
did you drop the baby?
No, I quite heroically kept the baby aloft.
Were you not holding on to the banister?
I don't know if that's heroism or just the done thing.
No, yeah, it's a done thing, yeah. If I'd been able to work a way of him cushioning my fall, I would have done it. But I actually landed on the, you know, you have those baby gates and they have the girl on the bottom and that go. I haven't shown you this.
You're a bad way rash.
Actually, it does look quite bad, actually. Yeah. I was chuckling at that story until I saw the evidence.
What would your father have said to that?
He'd have said,
shut up, mental zoning. Yeah.
Well, it's quite funny because when I went upstairs to get my oldest son's clothes and brought them down to get him dressed, as I walked down the stairs and walked into the hall, he went, "Well done, Daddy. You didn't fall over a second time."
He knows the limits of your skill. Okay, here we go. So that's our week, listeners.
It's my drinking arm.
Is that mostly what you use it for, Ben? I'm not so sure.
No.
I had a highlight, chaps, this day. I met a bona fide listener.
Oh, right, okay. So did I. Hang on. Yeah, go on. Go on. No, I'll go on.
I'll go first, shall I? So I was tasting yesterday at a competition, judging, called the Sommelier Wine Awards. And I was just about to leave, first out the door. I like to taste fast. And very nice chap came up to me, called Harry. Hi, Harry. And said how much he liked the show.
Good.
Wasn't related to me. Hadn't paid him.
Brilliant. It's
and
working.
He's in the wine world.
It's working, yeah, Sam.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. Yeah. Well, I was
yours,
in a pub.
Your wife?
No. I was at a pub, Mother's Day, Express Tavern in Kew. It's a really nice pub. And two guys came up to me and went, "You're Ben." Which is a bit weird. And they'd come to see the show, but they listened to the podcast as well.
Yeah.
And they said they really like it. And he said, "We should do cider." Oh. I didn't have the heart to tell him that I know. No one knows anything about cider.
Well, apart from our own cider.
Of course, we know a lot about our hobo cider, available in all good online drink shops.
People
are listening.
Learn about cider quickly and do a cider
tasting. Well, yeah.
I think that's in our capabilities. Right?
Yeah. I think it might be your...
apples.
Because actually...
Apple wine,
It's a friend of mine who I used to work with does actually have her own cider company. And actually, my sister-in-law also works for a cider company, Gospel Green, and my friend is called Little Pomelo. So I'm sure I can get some samples in and we'll look into them. Let's do a cider tasting.
Cider making is closer to wine making than it is to brewing.
We'll do a cider tasting within the next two months. A nice summary tasting.
If we're still on air after this rambling. Shall I go on to my spit or swallow?
Please do so.
Okay. Go on.
I'll swallow first. I'm swallowing women. They're all over the news. We've just had International Women's Day, Mother's Day, International Women's Day. I don't know if anyone here heard about it. It was quite.
Yeah,
they
I
made
did.
Quite a big noise. They're good at that.
Can I tell you they had quite a few things in the paper about everyone posting stuff about, oh, look at all our great women working for us. Da, 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 da.
Yeah.
Although actually, all women have been working for free pretty much all year until Women's Day because of the gender gap, pay gap.
Right.
What I did really like was BO running flights with women-only pilots.
Yes, I saw that as well. It was a very good publicity stunt because that is all it is, a publicity stunt.
Well, I agree,
for
and
women.
I did wonder if they were being paid the same as the men, but I just thought I'd leave that one there. But yes, I.
Oh, there was a tragic story. One of the pilots said she went into a school to do a school talk, and one of the little boys said, "Oh, this lady's a pilot," and his mate turned around and said, "No, women can't be pilots."
Well, actually, that was really interesting. Wow. Yeah, there was a thing, I was quizzing my son on the car this morning on the way to school. It was saying that even at a really young age, children decide what gender you can be to be a job. So apparently, beauticians, nurses, vets, perceived as being jobs for women, whereas surgeons, lawyers, whatever, and pilots would be perceived as a male job. So I was doing a quiz to my son in the car this morning saying, you know, what did you think a vet was? And he was saying man or woman. What do you think about a pilot, man or woman? Nurse, he said man or woman. He did pretty well, actually.
That's surprising because I'd say definitely women.
But a dustman, I've never seen a female dustman.
They're big in Spain, actually. And they're really glamorous. They all dress up and wear makeup. They're on the streets at 5 a.m. What else would they have been doing? All made up like that. Anyway, so that's women. Women are important, obviously. And they managed to organise an entire day for themselves. So pat on the bum for that. Well done. That was directly taken off from Viz, who put a letter out. That was a very good letter. Well done, Viz. We do love Viz. But anyway, I don't know that women need massive championing in our industries because there are great women who've been doing things for a long time. And as we've discussed on this podcast in the past, women have a better palate. Men, it's been scientifically proved. So I think they are already doing quite well in the world of spirits. But even so, it's good to sort of give them an extra pat on the bum. but also because they have announced the winners, so I'm not ruining anything for anyone. But the World Whiskey Awards, one of the big winners there this year has been Bunnahabhain. They've picked up a hell of a lot of awards in the Islay category, so best 12 year and under, 13 to 20 years for their 18-year-old and 21-year-old, and over for their 25-year-old, and their no age statement. So four key awards. And the reason this is relevant is because of the distiller there, Kirsty McCallum, Dr. Kirsty McCallum, another great woman in the industry and a doctor, and she's making this stuff. And when you're going up against some of the big hitters on Islay whiskies. You've got Ardbeg there, Lagavulin, which we're massive fans of. There's a lot of great whiskey there. So to have done all of that, well done her.
Well done her.
Non-patronising.
Yeah, it's difficult not to be though, isn't it? Well, that's the thing within the drinks industry. Johnny Walker launched the first ever Johnny Walker label with a woman on it instead of a man. And there was a mixed response to that, wasn't it?
Was it? Jane Walker, wasn't it?
It seemed to elicit a lot of disagreement with some women who felt that it was quite patronising. I think it's a fine line to tread between celebrating women and just patronising them.
BrewDog did this thing as well. They released this thing called Pink IPA, a ladies' version of the Punk IPA, but it was an ironic stab at people who do just that thing.
Mm.
But that in itself backfired because it didn't really move things on. Speaking from the beer world, any attempt to produce a beer aimed at women has been an unmitigated disaster.
The thing is, it can't help but fall into like gender stereotyping, because the whole point is anything like a beer or wine, anything should be gender neutral.
Mm.
Like, it's just, you know, everyone's different, and what you like isn't really according to your gender, it's according to your palate. So then to make something pink, if it's ironic, I'd say that's quite funny. But even so, it is the base saying, girls like pink.
Mm.
You know, and actually, that is definitely nowadays a kind of thing we're trying to step away from.
Mm.
And even going back to, like, women in the industry, if you think of massive multiple grocers, I would suggest most will be run by men.
Mm.
And if you think of even, I think probably buyers is fairly mixed. But I'd still think in most parts of the alcohol industry, I'd be surprised if at the very, very top, you know, sitting on boards and whatnot, there's definitely not more majority of men.
I mean, certainly when it comes to making it, there are a lot of women
when it gets
now
to
who are controlling the flavours that we're enjoying.
Lots of brilliant women winemakers, champagne makers,
brewers.
All that kind of thing.
There are women brewers.
Yeah, lots of women brewers. I mean, Sam, in your experience, have you ever encountered prejudice as a woman within the wine world? Have men behaved badly?
Really.
Do you think you would have got further in your career? And you've got very far. You've done very well, considering.
Against all odds.
Not the gender, just generally.
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
No, I'd say there's a couple of jobs. I suspect if I was a guy, I would be paid more.
Okay, that's prejudice.
But that's completely unsubstantiated. That's just a gut instinct.
Okay.
That they probably... Just, I don't know,
well, I think we should name names.
Yeah.
Who is on the page?
Don't caveat this shit. Come on.
I don't know. I'd say not really. But I can't help thinking that in the world in general, guys generally get paid more.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Oh, that's been proven. But it's just it was just interesting in the wine world, where I probably think it's out of the beer, wine and spirits, I'd imagine that's the least.
But when you start working for larger companies, which arguably is a wine company, but has operated like an FMCG... Mm. They're not getting into that area.
Okay. Well, it still exists. More Women's Days is what we need, isn't it?
Every day is a Women's Day. As I said to my wife.
Yeah.
Went down well.
So that was my swallow, women. Plenty of other women in the industry in the world of spirits. Joanne Moore at Greenall. She's making great gins like Bloom Gin. Joyce Spence at Appleton Rum. Appleton Rum, one of the great rums of the world.
Lovely
Jamaica
stuff.
Rum. She's a very talented woman. Lorena Vasquez as well at... another rum at Zacapa Rum.
But the original brewers were women.
Well, of course.
Ailmaker, yeah. Brewsters, mm-hmm. they were.
Yeah.
It was originally the domain of the female.
Well, it had been part perceived
female,
as domestic.
Exactly, and then it wasn't until it became commercially viable.
Then I think it might
of
have
course,
been
it was all seen as part of the domestic duties. Yeah.
Well, okay.
Cleaning.
Different times. You know, men were out hunting dinosaurs and that, and chasing stuff with spears, whereas the women had their roles, and brewing was very much part of that. And they also were seen as having a spiritual link to the gods, because they thought the gods were giving them alcohol,
power.
Right.
Fermentation.
That's enough of Ben's,
women.
Ham-fisted attempt at history there, which started with men and dinosaurs. This is distinct. Issue of extinction you've kind of overlooked. But that's my swallow. I don't want to be patronising. And we're not just doing it for the sake of it, you know, just to show that we love the ladies, you know, because we're really right on. But that's partly the reason I did that. Anyway, my spit is Russian leaders, particularly Vladimir Putin, who poisoned some people.
Allegedly.
Before we start this, let's have allegedly overarching this whole thing.
Let's do what Theresa May did, though, and call him out.
Yeah.
There's a ballsy woman. She did it. She called him out. Like, there's going to be trouble if you are responsible. We don't know if he is or he isn't. We do know that there was some state-funded drug implications with their sports, though. So when it comes to putting toxins into other people,
They're not backwards, about forwards.
Yeah, they have form.
Yeah, they do.
There was a documentary on that on Netflix, so I'm pretty sure that's all accurate. Vlad, if you're listening. But he doesn't put toxins into his own body. Now, Ben, we were talking about this a bit earlier, and you were slightly disputing it.
But disputing it. I see what you've done there. Very good.
It's kind of... yeah. Anyway, he apparently has come out recently and said he doesn't drink. Now, you've heard something to contradict this previously, but I think this is a recent change in lifestyle.
I think he went to university in East Germany and became very fond of a beer there that then Merkel kept on sending him as a gift because he has a real taste for it. Whether or not he drinks it or not, I don't know.
Right.
But I think he has drunk in the past.
I think he doesn't not drink. He's not a complete abstainer, it should be said. Putin does apparently drink only at formal receptions. So he does have a big abstinence around it, though. He says he tries to stay sober for religious reasons. He's got quite a serious health regime. Interestingly, and this could be a dubious source, but Getty Images were on the, on the webpage, so I'm going to use that as my fulcrum for fact. He has a strict routine. He sleeps into the late hours of the morning, though, on a daily basis. So he's not an early riser. Doesn't really eat his first meal until noon. And then he has an omelette. Even though it's lunchtime, he still has sort of breakfast things like omelettes and porridge. And he doesn't drink coffee until after his breakfast, which seems like a strange decision to make. I'm going to drink it, but just not till after I've eaten. But he cannot be served milk products when he travels, and any food served to Putin by a host must be checked. So an actual... official taster, just
that's
like the Tsar's.
Yeah.
That's amazing, considering what's going on at the moment.
Yeah.
He obviously feels slightly paranoid about...
What was the restaurant that this guy was allegedly poisoned by Putin? Allegedly.
Zizi's.
Zizi's.
Yeah.
Was it? I once found a snail in my salad in Zizi's.
But I think that he should possibly take a leaf out of Boris Yeltsin's
book. Yeah, he was a very good drinker.
He was a massive drinker, and it didn't do him any harm. So perhaps he should get on the vodka. We did a bit of reading around Boris Yeltsin for our show, actually, one year. And one of the interesting things about him was he was quite a wayward child. And when he was a kid, he was mucking about with a hand grenade. And
as
it blew his finger and his thumb off, which is interesting.
Because
I've never really noticed that about him. If you see him in pictures, look closely, and he hasn't got a finger
or digits going.
But he did drink a lot. There are various stories about his drinking escapades. One of our favourites was when he stayed at the White House as a guest. He was drinking quite heavily and snuck past Secret Service bodyguards in his underpants and hailed a taxi and went out for a pizza. I mean,
he was brilliant.
What a ledge. He could be one of our legends of liquor, but he did
have
a problem. Are
you sure he hasn't been already?
No, I don't think we could
really stand him up. I think we've talked about the Russians before, but...
We can't really stand him up. He was...
Neither can he, really.
Yeah, yes, very good.
Was he basically an alcoholic?
I think he probably was.
Well, I think in Russian standards, no, but global standards, probably
yes.
He said Bjorn Borg's face looked like a plate of meatballs.
Yeah, he not only just said that, he said that at a conference in Sweden to a lot of Swedish
just
people.
Talk about, you know, the guy who set up IKEA, who recently died?
Mm. I didn't know he recently died.
Yes, yeah.
I missed that one.
I thought there was going to be loads of IKEA sort of flat-pack furniture gags on Facebook. There wasn't. But he said that when he was trying to open the first IKEA in Moscow or St. Petersburg, he had loads of meetings with the Russians and they were drinking lots of vodka throughout it. And he actually says he developed an alcohol dependency. It just knocked him to sleep. I mean, they just said that the vodka was day in, day out, just part of the ritual. And he said he found it really difficult, which makes it me think that Putin... He must sit down at big kind of conference tables a lot with
just
lots of people offering him vodka. So he must.
Well, that's what Stalin did, didn't he? He insisted that his board sat together until 5 o'clock in the morning when they were writing policy and just drank excessively so that he could get what he wanted through. So, yeah, it's probably a good thing. I mean, I put him down
Stalin's
as my
spit. Stalin's not the role model, really, is he?
But if Putin did give me anything to drink, I would be spitting it, ladies and gentlemen, or I'd have an official taster. So that's my spit or swallow.
Excellent.
We are now going to move on to something we could spit or swallow because it's a wine tasting with you, Sam.
Yay!
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door.
Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
You're listening to It's the Drink Talking.
So for this week, I am going to taste a red wine and a white wine. And what I thought was I would taste a couple of more esoteric grape varieties.
Have you run out of the big ones?
No, I haven't run out of the big ones at all. But I just thought, it's Easter in a few weeks. So I thought, most people are having lamb. I think I'm going to try and abstain this year.
Mm. Why?
You know what? Every year, this happens every year. We live in the country and they've always got the little lambs up in the biodynamic
farm.
My
son's just been
us.
To a lambing at the local farm.
They're so cute. Yeah. And I just, every year I go, I don't want to munch a lamb. Mm. Every year
they really
I smell
are.
The lamb yeah. cooking and I always... go back on my word and eat the lamb. This year, I've said to my husband, I'm categorically not eating lamb this Easter.
Why? Because they look cute and fluffy.
Because, you know
well,
what?
They are children. I mean, it's...
Yeah, it sounds really hypocritical. Yeah,
they're children,
children,
but they are sheep.
I know, but they're
children. They're baby
children.
Sheep.
They're little sheep. They're sheep,
little sheep
children.
So for me, I am not going to be eating lamb. However, I've got a white and a red. And rather than recommending Cabernet, because normally with lamb you'd recommend a Cabernet Sauvignon, because Cabernet is quite minty.
Okay.
So if you think of lamb and mint sauce, a Cabernet Sauvignon is the perfect match
okay.
for
good.
Lamb.
That's good
so there is another option. But I thought I'd do something different than go with the tried and tested, let's have a Cabernet Sauvignon. So I've got a red wine made from Giriff. Which actually makes me chuckle because apparently it was propagated by a guy called Dr. Giriff. It just sounds like something out of a Bond film. So we'll give that a go. And then I've also got another esoteric wine for the white, which is a ferment.
Now that's got to have mint in it, hasn't it? It's got it on the label.
Not at all. Not at all. So let's pour the first one. So we're going to pour the...
So there's no connection
the ferment.
Between either of these wines other than they go well with lamb.
No, there's no connection between...
This is a white
between,
wine.
Yeah, there's no connection...
You can't have white wine with lamb.
You are if you're vegetarian and not having the bloody lamb.
Oh!
So we're catering for those who are trying not to eat the little gambling lambs.
Right, this
so
is a good idea.
We're just doing two unusual grape varieties for Easter, one white, one red. The first one is from the company Royal Tokai.
Tokai.
White from Hungary.
We have had a Tokai, but we've had the white. So normally Tokai is a sweet, luscious, rich pudding wine, and the main grape varieties in it are Ferment and Haslevlu.
I beg your pardon?
Haslevlu.
I love you. I love you.
Yeah, have a couple more glasses of this and then you can say that to your missus.
Sam, I'll tell it to you.
Or to me, even better. So this is a dry ferment, and they've said on it specifically that it's dry because normally ferment is in sweet Tokai. And so it's the great variety is Ferment. Wow. It's 2016. Ferment's quite neutral, quite high acid, which is why it works very well in Tokai. And this one's had a little bit of oak.
That is bone dry.
Is that dry? I can't. Wait a minute.
I don't know, it's pretty acidic.
Right, the clue is dry ferment. I think we can safely assume it is dry. That
but
is
it's
dry.
Still quite...
I don't know, my tongue's...
Yeah,
but la, the actual... La, la, la. Yeah. Talk.
See, I like that. And this is quite a smart wine. So this is exclusively for Sainsbury's. So it's Sainsbury's Taste the Difference. So it's £10 a bottle.
What?!
Yeah,
that is,
beautiful,
crazy talk.
Beautiful bottle. It's got Tokai embossed on the bottle.
It's got a long neck.
Well, that doesn't earn it £10.
But can you can
It's got a royal crown on the front, I suppose.
Oh, I like it, actually. It hasn't got loads of really obvious fruit flavour. It's quite restrained aromatically, but you've got quite a lot of spice. It's basically fermented in stainless steel, but after fermentation, half goes into oak. So you get...
And then they mix it together again.
Yeah.
I think it smells quite oaky.
Yeah,
but then
it
doesn't really... So what would sort you... of vanillins and caramelly, none of those sort of
but
oaky...
But the finish is lovely, like you can taste it for ages. It's got
it's
lovely,
really growing on me,
That really lovely texture. So it's kind of just lightly spicy, very fresh, quite elegant. I think this is a slightly unusual wine, which is the whole point of this tasting.
And it's
Were you about
firming,
to say what would you eat with it?
Yes, I was going to say, what would you have with this if you were a lamb denier?
Crikey, I think you could have loads of things. I think because of that acid, you know, it can cut through lots of things. I think what would be lovely with this would be a spring green risotto.
Risotto.
Oh. Yeah, like nice imagine risotto. Like a really nice creamy risotto with like broad beans and peas, maybe some artichokes, you know, something really yummy. And then this citrus acidness would cut through the richness and the parmesan and the butter. But they've got that texture on the finish with a bit of
a blue cheese
the
salad
spice.
Might be quite nice with this.
I'll tell you what, a dash of sage and something peachy.
Really?
You're reading the back of the label, Tom. But yeah, it's got some nice herbal notes in. Is that new to you, chaps?
Yeah.
I'm assuming you haven't tried a ferment
before.
I'm
still...
The jury's out for you, I can tell.
No. I'm still not quite sure what it is. As in, if I went into the Off License or Majestic
or
Sainsbury's,
obviously
I'll be asking, the name of the wine style is ferment, is it?
The grape is ferment.
The
grape so rather than
ferment,
having a Chardonnay or a Sauvignon.
Exclusive to Hungary?
Pretty much.
Okay.
Let's say 95%. I think you get
Hungary's
another
famous
Eastern...
for the Tokaj dessert one, which we tried.
Yes.
And this is their second most famous
sort of style. The grapes that make Tokaj are ferment and Haslivlu. They're the two grapes.
Okay.
And there's another one as well that goes in there
I'm
as well.
I'm not ordering the Haslivlu because everyone would just...
Forget that. And it's...
Give me a handkerchief.
It's a nightmare to spell as well. But yeah, so basically the ferment is the grape. So like some wines you might go and it might have a Chardonnay on it or a Cabernet.
Okay.
This ferment is the grape variety. The company is Royal Tokaj and it's Sainsbury's Taste the Difference Dry Ferment.
I've never heard of that.
No.
Well, that's why I'm trying to...
I reckon after a while that's going to come down because I think a lot of people are going to look at that and think, I don't know what that is. And then I think the £10 price point will drop after a few months.
Well, I like it so much I'm going to scull the rest of this you pour the next one.
It is lovely and I do think that it's a grower. I think when you have a glass and I think it's probably a food wine. Like,
what
I do
percentage
think
is it?
I'd have it with Twiglets or peanuts before the meal.
You have everything with Twiglets and peanuts.
Well,
it's a go-to.
I think that's very elegant, a bit different, and also it looks very smart, so it'd be nice for a gift. So if you're going to someone for Easter...
Can you give a taste of difference?
No.
As a gift?
No,
you can't.
You can't.
I'm sorry.
It says Sainsbury's on the front.
Guys, it's a bit snobby.
No, I mean, I think they're great. I think
I wouldn't know that someone would pay £10 for it.
If I'm gifting wine, I go for something cheap and unknown.
Okay. Now, look, guys, tell me what you think about this bottle. Oh, my God, it's so heavy. Oh,
I've tried this before.
No.
Oh, have you?
I think it's trying
like a
bit
looks like
too
a
hard.
Sheriff's badge.
Yeah. It does look like a sheriff's badge.
It's not rusty,
so the second,
but it could be.
The second wine we're trying is another slightly left-field grape variety, and this is called Durif, spelt D-U-R-I-F, and it's Burton Vineyard Durif, available at Aldi for £7.49.
Okay.
And this is a nice price point. Now, boys, what do you think about the colour?
Well, first of all, can we just deal with the name? Durif, ferment? They do both sound like cleaning products. I'm not sure about their name. And also, just on
it's
the bottle,
hard.
I think it looks sleek and quite sort of sexy, and it's got a silver plaque on the front. I don't know if it's just trying a bit too hard. I think that's all right.
Just to describe it to the listeners, because this is an audio medium.
Yeah, so it's a long, skinny bottle in a Bordeaux bottle, but Bordeaux extended. It's even longer than a Bordeaux bottle. Mm. And it's got nothing on the bottle at all, apart from a little, as Ben rightly says, like a little silver sheriff's badge.
Yep.
But yeah, as I was saying before, Durif is a great variety that was propagated by a guy called Dr. Durif, hence its name. And it's...
Where is it made?
It was initially made in France, and its parents are Syrah, and I have to say, a great variety I'm not familiar with, Pelorsin.
Wow, you're not familiar with?
Yeah.
The great master and mistress of wine.
However, in Australia, it's very widely planted in the Riverina and Riverland area, which are kind of where you get more sort of value, cheaper wines from, because you can crop it quite heavily, and it's still got these amazing colours and amazing flavours.
It is very nice.
Yeah,
that
is very nice.
That is big.
But look at the
it's 14.5%.
You're right. I think it would go very well
with lamb.
With lamb.
Or any big red meat. So a steak
or beef. Do you have red
currant
cheddar? Yeah, you do.
I think you do.
And I think this goes.
You can have what you like.
Yeah,
I mean, I've mustard.
Mayonnaise if you want.
Yeah,
but no, red currant jelly is something I traditionally have had in my family.
For years.
It's also known as Petit Sirah in America.
Oh, okay.
Petit Sirah in America.
Fruity and rich.
I like
that. Yeah, it's just very fruity, very rich, loads of black fruit. Let me taste it.
That is really nice.
It sticks around,
doesn't it?
Quite jammy.
That's a good gifting wine because it looks like
The sheriff's badge gives it
certain huge colours.
Authority, Ben. Yeah.
Yes.
But yeah, if you like big colour, big flavour, lots of fruit, but some smoothness. And this is aged on sort of oak sort of chips and staves. So you get that lovely kind of oaky flavour. It's just a more affordable way to make it oaked. And also, as an aside, when I used to be a buyer, I used to buy quite a lot of wines from Bob Burton, who owns Burton Vineyard with some other people. And he is one of the nicest men. Such a nice bloke. So not only are the wines fantastic, but he is also a really nice guy. And in this area of Riverina, where you get quite a lot of Deriff, there's another winemaker who's not Bob, called Sam. And his reg plate is one Deriff. It's hilarious. You always know when Sam's around because he always recognises his truck.
Flipping out.
Okay. I think they call them utes.
I sound corrected. But utes. So they're my two more esoteric varieties for Easter.
Brilliant.
A ferment. I think that's good.
Yeah.
For those maybe who are abstaining this year from lamb, given the increasing vegetarianism.
This idea that you shouldn't, because they're nice and fluffy and young.
Well, no, it's more the fact that they're young. They've just, I mean, why people, I think, are a bit more.
Oh, it's okay.
Because it's had no
kill
life.
Old people, is it?
Well, old people want to kill themselves and can't, Ben. I mean, killing old people, another debate entirely. Let's not get started on this. But I think you'd make a case
of the lambs.
Over if you had to kill a child or an old person. Go.
Well, I don't know. Depends how they're behaving. Well, I think they're very nice.
Thank you, Sam.
Thanks.
Really enjoyed that. And it's put me in the mood, I tell you.
Great.
To listen to a legend of liquor. And this week, it is Ben.
In past podcasts, we have talked at some length about the American craft beer revolution that in turn inspired the craft boom, which we're experiencing right here in this country right now. And we've talked about, do you remember Jack McAuliffe, the guy who started New Albion, who doesn't really get the credit he deserves? We've also talked about Ken Grossman at Sierra Nevada, who...
Great man.
A great man who started the Sierra Nevada brewery out of White Shop back in the early 80s.
Yeah,
in Chico, great town. God, I love Chico. Should we go back there, Ben?
Oh, be amazing. But this week, I want to talk about what probably the third legend of liquor related to the West Coast beer scene.
The third point in the triangle.
The third leg on the stool.
That's better than a triangle. Although we did shapes before.
Yeah. Yeah, we've done triangles a lot. My last legend of liquor was a triangle. Yeah.
Well, actually, let's make this the new talk.
Hang on.
Those were the horse.
Let's go back to that triangle because Ben's news just in.
Remember those two guys that approached me in the pub and listened to the podcast?
Yes.
Guess what he was drinking?
Bass
try. And do you know why?
Because
he'd heard it about it. And he'd been telling the bartender what we've been talking about. So there we go.
Yeah, it works.
Oh, I like that.
This is happening.
Brands with money.
Yes. We are influencing.
We can shift pints.
Yeah. So there you are. But this week I want to talk about a man called Fritz Maytag, who is the guy that breathed life back into a brewing company in San Francisco called the Anchor Brewing Company. And basically, they were one of the few breweries to remain open during Prohibition. They stayed open because they were making baking soda, in inverted commas, I think.
So a bit like money laundering, when actually you're pretending you're like doing dry cleaning.
A lot of the alcohol.
They were selected, weren't they? They were allowed to stay open for medicinal purposes.
Yes.
They were using methods.
Essentially, in the 50s, after the Second World War, there was this massive consolidation in the brewing world in America. All the big breweries like Pabst, Miller, Budweiser all went round buying up all the little breweries. Because back in the 50s, after the Second World War, everyone was just wanting to buy American goods. The TV culture had started, TV dinners had started. People just wanted homogenous American brands. And so the beer sort of landscape became incredibly monochrome and sort of one-dimensional. But Anchor Brewing in San Francisco remained open, but the beer was shit. It was really, really bad. All the sort of small brewery beer was pretty bad as well, mainly because in California, the weather was very hot, so the beer spoiled. Now, Fritz Maytag, he's the son of a guy who, he's part of a Maytag family who made washing machines. So he's from a very rich background. He was just a lager drinker. He didn't really drink beer, wasn't really into beer, but he sort of stumbled across this beer called Anchor Beer, which back then was slightly better than the other beers because, as he told me when we interviewed him, because San Francisco has its own little weather sort of climate there, it's a bit cooler than the rest of California.
Microclimate, exactly.
Thank you. That meant that the Anchor beer didn't spoil as quickly as the others. So
it was cooler.
And essentially, there was this brewery, it's ramshackle, it's run down. No, most people in San Francisco didn't even know it's still open. And he bought it. And he breathed life back into the brewery. This was in the 60s. He did nothing about beer at all. And then he started going to brewing conferences, speaking to other brewers. And at the same time, all of a sudden, people were becoming a bit more enlightened to better beer. And also with the Vietnam War, which a bit later, people were rejecting these big American brands. So bit by bit, he made the beer better. He moved the brewery to the Potrero District in San Francisco. And essentially, Anchor Steam Beer, which is still available today, is the beer that a lot of people say kickstarted the craft brewing revolution along with Sierra Nevada Pale Ale. And it's called Anchor Steam because people in San Francisco used to be able to see the open-air fermenters, the steam coming off the rooftop of the brewery. So it's
called Anchor. Can you get it in the UK?
Yes, you can.
It's been here for a while, hasn't it? It's one of those.
That and Pale Ale were one of the first ones to come across to the UK. This was sort of 20 years ago.
Well, this was before we were writing.
Early 2000s.
Yeah.
And it's a really good beer, also called California Common. He sold it in 2010, but he didn't grow it that big. He had no intention of making it big, but they still used open fermenters. They used whole hops. It's a really lovely beer. And he is a very kind of engaging guy.
He's a very bright guy, isn't
very
he?
Very bright guy, yeah.
And he's also...
He bamboozled us with weather stuff when we went
yeah.
to...
Yeah, it was quite... We, yeah. about it was, it. We were a bit out of our
yeah,
depth.
Yeah, mentioned isobars and the like.
Oh,
crikey, yeah. He also championed spirits as well.
Yes, and
craft
he's...
Craft spirits.
Yeah.
And what's interesting when you look at the craft brewing scene in America and you watch the graph of success and how it's peaked over the last 30 years, craft distilling is following the same pattern exactly. And he was there and he launched a gin and a whiskey. And we were just saying earlier that old Potrero, which is his whiskey, is about to get a new lease of life. Berry Brothers are bringing that back here.
Ah.
So he's got form across the whole drinks gamut, hasn't he, Ben? I don't know if he ever made any wine.
No, I don't think so.
But I agree, he's a total legend.
He's amazing. And he reintroduced Anchor Steam in bottle in 1971. And then not long after... A lot of competition came in, and that sort of saved it. But if he hadn't done it, then there wouldn't have been a kind of touchstone in terms of styles and the way to do it. So, I mean, he had the money to do it, which helped, which is what Jack McAuliffe, who we talked about before, that he didn't have that luxury of a bit of family coin behind him.
I think it helps as well in a city like San Francisco, which is quite open-minded.
So
yeah,
they
want to. They
I
want
love
to taste
San Francisco.
It's a good town.
Been for years.
It's a
Love
good
it.
Town.
And it's still there. The brewery's still running.
I thought you meant San Francisco.
San Francisco's still
yeah.
there.
Still
which
there.
Has a lot of earthquakes.
And it is on the West Coast, so it's a bit of an easy target. So
yeah.
Fingers crossed.
Exactly.
Earthquakes. There's lots going on there, but it's still there.
Being part of the Institute of Masters of Wine, you get a lot of... you can go on a lot of amazing trips a year that are largely supported by various sort of countries and institutes and whatnot. And... being a full-time mother, I can't go to any of them. And the only one this year that I was absolutely gutted about, there's the most amazing trip to sort of Napa and all round the vineyards. And, I can't go.
Why can't you just...
take 6 months with me? Why not?
I mean, how long are these trips?
This one was quite a long one, at least a week.
A week is pushing it, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's when you get into that territory.
Yeah, it was a shame because I just looked at it and I thought, oh, God, I'd love to go on there.
We're about to turn down California. We're going to be working...
with a California beer in our show this year.
Yeah, Lagunitas. We're working with Lagunitas.
Oh, nice.
Who, yeah, really lovely beer.
I'm going to come up and see you again this year.
Good.
Bank holiday. I used to like their bank holiday weekend.
Yeah, no.
Yeah. Are we going to we go on the Monday. But
Monday
we'll be there
what?
Saturday and the Sunday.
But you'll be doing the show Saturday, Sunday.
Yeah.
We'll just our last two Monday. Shows, yeah. So it will be pretty lackluster. But
we're doing the South Bank in less. London. On the
14th of April.
14th, oh God, it's
the 14th. Saturday, 14th of April, Underbelly, South Bank.
Will we have Lagunitas in that show?
Maybe.
Hopefully.
Well, good, that's all sound brilliant.
Yeah. All right, well,
so
thank
Fritz
you,
Maytag, go and buy the beer, Anchor Steam, and they do an Anchor Porter. They do a really good barley wine called Old Foghorn.
They still do their small beer, that was all right as well.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, that's great
go
stuff.
And buy them. Thank you, Ben. Thank you, Sam, for your tasting.
Oh, you're welcome.
I'm mildly.
You can take
enhanced
it
as a human being for drinking that. I hope you enjoyed that, listeners. We'll be back again next week with more drink ramblings. Thanks for listening and speak to you then. Cheers.
Cheers.
Bye.
This was a Grand Cru podcast from 7 Digital.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.